Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Somm TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's podcast, we are going to speak about one of my favorite regions in the world, Borgogna. On today's pod, I have Teo and Paul of Domaine Merlin in the Macon, and they are going to talk about Borgogna looking to the future as a new generation of winemakers take the lead on climate change and changing the way things are farmed and perceived in the region. I want to remind all of you on Somm TV, right now we have a brand new original documentary called Inheriting the Future about the next generation of Borgogna, which you have to check out. It's a beautiful documentary. Without further ado, my conversation with the next generation of Borgogna. Paul and Theo, it's an honor to have you both on. It is something we talk about a lot with Somm TV and in my career. I've probably been to Borgogna maybe 25, 30 times, maybe more, I'm not sure. And every single time I go, I realize I know nothing about this place. I think I know a lot, and I realize I know nothing. It's an incredible opportunity to have two younger men who are brothers, which I'm sure is interesting to work with your brother in the vines. I want to start with where you two are located and a little bit about your story, because I don't know that people give the Macon the respect it deserves.
We are located in South Burgundy, Mâconnais, which is a region very close to Beaujolais region. So it's the east part of France. And we are not as famous than Côte d'Or, but we are still producing very good wines.
Absolutely. So let me start off with, how long has your family been making wines in the south of Burgundy?
It's been since 1987. So it's
1987.
More than 30 years.
So basically, Paul and Theo, your entire lives have been involved in wine. I mean, that is everything you know since you were little kids, right?
Yes. And also a lot of the work in the vineyard.
Yeah, that's good, honest work. A lot of American children don't get to experience that kind of work. Yeah. So, Paul, why don't you tell us, what are you growing in the Mâconnais? What are the grapes and what are the wines that you are making?
So we're producing mostly Chardonnay variety vines, and we have also a little bit of Gamay. We do Beaujolais, so it's Moulin Avant, cru from Beaujolais. And we do have also a little bit of Pinot Noir variety, but it's mostly Chardonnay. It's 85% Chardonnay wines that we are making.
One of the things about Borgogna is that it's not an enormous region. You can drive from the top, you know, the very, very top. You could be in Chablis and you can go all the way down to the Macon easily, you know, in a car. But it's, I think, pound for pound, it's probably one of the most complex regions in the entire world. When I said I go there and I realize I know nothing, I can't overstate that. Every time I'm there, I learn more and more and more. If I was going to ask you, like a young child, describe Borgogna to me. How do you describe this region as a whole? Because I think about it as so many little parts. How do you describe Borgogna as a whole?
So to me, Borgogna, it's a lot of different hills, a lot of different altitude, exposition. So very, very complex region. But we have mostly Chardonnay grapes. So, yeah, the grape variety is mostly the same everywhere, but wines are very, very different in the whole region, which means we've got a lot of different terroirs.
Yeah, well, that's an understatement because I know that there are more grapes than just Chardonnay and Pinot. I mean, you have Aligoté, you have some Gamay, but to take these two main grapes and make so many different wines out of them, I mean, so many different wines, it's almost become a cliche in the wine world to say that, you know, wine tastes different from one place to the next if you walk 50 feet. But in Borgogna, that's the truth. I mean, it really is. You can have three rows of vines here and then you walk across a path and the wine coming from those next three vine rows is completely different. So what I want to try to understand is, how do you maintain consistency with these wines knowing that you have so many variables? You know, the soil in this very small amount of area, the altitude, the hills, the everything. How do you maintain consistency and how do you decide how to make a wine? You know, how do you decide that you're going to make this wine in this style based on where it is growing?
We are not making wine. We don't know what the wine gonna be in the bottle. About the climate, every vintage is different. I think there is a small part of consistency, but about the vintage, it's really different. But the terroir make a lot of work in our region. In 5 kilometers driving, it's a really different terroir, very different soils. So that makes a lot in the wine.
Yeah, I would say that the vines are grown here in this region since many, many years. So a lot of people, a lot of generation worked in the vineyard, and they know the best place for the wines now. And we have the mission to consider this, and also to show to the people how the wine is good in this place, so in different place.
Well, you talk about the history. Theo, you're the older brother, so you've been around a little longer than Paul, who's still a baby. Well, when you have so much history and so many people who have put their hands in the soil, how do you change anything? Does anybody let you change? I mean, are you allowed to do things different, or do you... I want to talk about the evolution of Borgogna and how you can actually make a change. Is it possible? You know, even little changes. I mean, how difficult is it?
Yes, we are allowed to change some little things, but for us, tradition, that's the best way to have the best aromas to our wines. So if you don't respect the tradition, you can do very, very good wines, but you won't show the terroir, really. So it's a difficult question because it depends on the point of view. But to me, it's very, very important to listen to the oldest generation and to understand what they learned. And like this, we can really show the terroir and also we can make great wines, simply, yeah.
Does Borgogna ever truly change? I mean, there's this idea. I was told by somebody recently a really great analogy that if you look at a snail, it seems like the snail is sitting still and they don't move very fast. But if you watch a snail for an entire day or a week, it moves very far and it goes all over the place. But you don't see it unless you stop and watch. And I was told that Borgogna is similar to that, where things change very slowly. And evolution changes very slowly, but it's always changing slightly, adapting to things. With you being the younger generation, I'm curious, how do changes happen in Borgogna as far as the evolution of the wines, dealing with things like climate change? I mean, these are big topics. There's a lot of pressure, I would assume, on you guys being the next generation to come into a region that goes back 900 years or more. How does it change? What is the perception from on the ground with you about Borgogna and kind of its evolution?
I think the evolution of winemaking in our region, it's all about adaptation. And that's why you are speaking about climate change. It's all about this because the weather, it's really different. We can see it. And we have frost during spring now, almost every year. We have also quite a lot of storm hail during summer. So it's really difficult, and we have to adapt all of the time, every year, and it changes every year.
So you have, in your lifetime, you've seen this big change happen for the way it happens in the vineyards.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And how does that affect, I mean, aside from the obvious that you probably are producing less fruit, things are volatile, how does it affect the actual farming? What do you do differently now? Because I know in Borgogna, you're not allowed to irrigate. There are very strict laws and rules with maintaining tradition, as you say it. So what do you do in the vineyards to adapt
these changes? Like we can change the rootstock, so the American rootstock. We can have later rootstock. Like this, we can have later grapes maturity. And also, so for us, we are still plowing a lot the soils to maintain the water deep into the soil. That's big deal to do this. And like this, we don't have grasses in our vineyard. Like this, the grasses doesn't take the water. The water is just for the vines. And also, by the past, we used to take out the leaves into the vines. Like this, we had less botrytis. Now we never have botrytis, so we leave the leaves just to have some shadow on the grapes. Like this, we don't have we have less sunburn. So it's just small adaptation like this, and it makes the difference with the climate change. But actually, at the moment, for us, the climate change it's a big problem with the storm. Also, the vineyard is earlier into the season, so like this we can have frost at the beginning. We have less water during the summer, but also we have less disease, and so we have to spray less. We have better maturity. By the past, a lot of people had not a very good maturity, and especially in some village here in Mâconnais, which is high in altitude. Some people were used to add sugar to have a little bit more alcohol volume and a little bit more maturity, but now we don't have this kind of problem. So in a way, climate change at the moment it's not so bad things for us, but it changed so fast. We don't know how it will be in the future, next 10 years, I don't know. But at the moment, if you come to our vineyard now in Mâconnais, it's very impressive. We have so many small grapes, so it's the flowering at the moment. So it's smelling very good in the vineyard, but we've got a lot of grapes. So it depends. This year we didn't have frost. In 21 we had a lot of frost. It was terrible, and it was rainy during the whole year. 20 and 22 that was very warm, but still okay. We've got very, very good wines in the cellar at the moment, with a lot of difference between each terroirs. So I don't know what I should think about this, because we've got so many different year. Every year is another challenge, but very different.
Yeah, this is one of the things I think that is a misconception about winemakers, is you don't get a lot of time. There is a lot of time, but then all of a sudden you have to adjust very quickly to things. And so it's like kind of this very slow, very fast, very slow, very fast. And
exactly.
I really admire it. It is not for, we have a saying that you have to have a strong stomach to do a job like that. And you guys must have a very strong stomach. What are you doing different, your generation, from your parents' generation? Because if you think about your father, your grandfather, your grandmother, your mom, how did they farm different, and how did they make wine different compared to the way you see making wine? Is there anything different that you're doing?
So first of all, we don't have grandparents who were winemakers. Our parents created the domain, so we have only one generation before us. And what we do different, it's mostly about frost during spring, because we are now doing special techniques in the vineyard to don't lost too many shoots.
But during the pruning period, so we change a lot during the pruning. So we prune the vines later than the past. Like this, the vegetation will start later. And also, in some vineyards, we can leave two canes. And like this, if we have frost, we leave the two canes. And if we don't have frost, we cut one. Like this, we just have one cane as usual. And this is a very, very good work to do. For example, in 21, we had one vineyard very sensitive to the frost. And we experimented this technique in 21. It was the first year. And we had, so as I said before, terrible frost. But in this vineyard, very sensitive, we had a very good yield, like the normal yield, because of this technique. So this is very good adaptation, but we can't do this every year because the vineyard is, how can I say, we ask too much for the vines. So in the future, yes, in the future, the vegetation decrease. So this year we didn't reproduce this technique because if we did, the vineyard will...
It'll get exhausted. It'll get tired.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I mean, that's just another layer of the kind of pivots or adjustments that you have to make as you're going through this every year. You don't know how you're going to prune the vine. It's not like, yeah. It's not like 3 months before you can prepare for how it's going to prune. I find it interesting going back to climate change just for a second. Not that climate change is good, but that you've been able to use it to your advantage here with the grapes ripening a little better, a little fuller for, you know, the alcohol level you want and the flavor that you want. Do you find that that's the consensus across the Mâconnais and a lot of Burgundy, that right now it can be used as a tool, that it's getting warmer right now? Or are people very afraid?
Lots of people are very afraid about this, even as a citizen. For the winemaking, no, everybody is afraid. As Theo said before, I maybe in 10 years it will be very difficult to produce the grapes. It will be very difficult. I don't know. We'll see. But we need to do something to stop the climate change, yeah, because it's getting worse and worse every year. We see it really well because we are outside almost every day, and it's getting warmer and warmer every year.
It's a very scary thing, and especially when your wines are based on so much tradition. I mean, people expect a certain thing. You expect a certain thing from your wines, that to change it to such a, if you guys end up having to pick a month earlier than you were planning, you know, that is a scary prospect in the winery. Winemaking only goes so far. You know, you need most of it to happen, you know, in the vineyards. And then, so that's a very scary thing to think about. You, working with different grapes, what grapes do you find that it affects Chardonnay or Pinot or Gamay more than the other? I mean, is Chardonnay more delicate, and are you worried more for one particular grape varietal, or is it across the board?
I think the Pinot is more delicate. But again, by the past, we used to have every year botrytis, especially with Pinot Noir. And now, so we've got a sorting table, vibrating table at the cellar. But now we never use it because the Pinot Noir is very healthy. We pick only very healthy grapes every year, except 21, but that's the only exception. But for example, another example, the Gamay is very tolerant to warm climate. We did in 19, we had very, very warm climate, and we picked the Gamay at Moulin Avant a little bit too late to me. But the wine now is very, very good. And but for Chardonnay, it's different because people expect a little bit more higher acidity with white wines, and we have less acidity with the climate change. So that's a little bit a problem for us. And we never add acids to our wines, so we have to, the only tool we have, it's we have to pick earlier. And we have to find the pickers earlier, and because we pick all by hand. So that's a little bit more difficult for us.
This is definitely a concern. So with Chardonnay, and this is a big question, so I understand people who are, especially you guys, but people who are truly into wine know that this is a question that can't be answered simply. But if you talk about the Mâconnais, what is the difference between the Chardonnay there and maybe, say, the Côte de Beaune or somewhere else? How do you know it's from the Mâcon? How do you know the Chardonnay is from this place? I mean, I know that this is a question that could write 10 books. But if I was going to say I'm having a Mâcon Chardonnay, What does that mean?
Mâcon Chardonnay, to me, it's very... So first, it's the big difference is the terroir. So of course, it's the taste, finally. And to me, Mâconnais, it's with the taste, it's closer to Chablis wines with lower acidity level. So what does it mean? It means there is more chokes in the soils and high level of minerality in the mouth and in the nose. We don't have a lot of acidity, but we've got so much minerality in our wines, it makes the balance with the alcohol. It makes the structure of the wines. To me, this is Mâconnais Chardonnay.
And is there, here's another question. So if you're talking about, but you guys know your wine very well. So if we're talking about your Chardonnays, would you eat a different food with your wine than say like a Poulin Montrachet or something? Is there a different, is there like a meal where you're like, my Chardonnay works better with this versus, because I like to think about the incredible diversity across Bourgogne. And one of the best ways for, I think, the consumer to understand that is when you put it with food. Now, I happen to like everything with everything, but that being said, is there a meal with your Chardonnays that you're like, this is better with my wine than some with some other wine, food-wise?
Yeah, for me, it's the chicken of breast, breast chicken, which is a region very close to our. And the chicken works really well with our wine. Chicken with sauce, with white sauce, with mushrooms. Yeah, it goes really well with our wine.
Oh, I want that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want that. That's great. No, that's fantastic. So I think the perception, and I'm going to overstate here, but the perception of Bourgogne is that the wines are very expensive. You have to be in a very different class to be able to afford it. What's the truth about Bourgogne as far as the way, how accessible the wines are? When you travel and you sell your wines, do you hear that there's a perception that Bourgogne is expensive or that it's out of reach or that you have to know a lot about it to get into it? How do you introduce people to the region who have the wrong idea of what it is?
Well, I say to them, Mâconnais is not very expensive, but still very good.
I think it's amazing that there's a secret like the Mâconnais that exists because you really can. I'll let you speak, but it really is one of the great places to find wines that are probably underpriced. I don't want to change that because I enjoy the wines.
No, and we don't really want to change this neither, but also I want to say now we've got Premier Cru in Mâconnais. And so that will increase the price a little bit. But I think the winemakers doesn't want really to increase the price, as in Côte d'Or.
Why wouldn't the winemakers want the price to be higher? What would be the reason? Wouldn't you want your wine to cost $1,000, 1,000 euros a bottle?
So it would be probably better for the winemakers, but a lot of colleagues they want the wine to be accessible to the people. For us, it's the same. We are young. We don't have a lot of money, but we love the wines and we love to share it. So it would be better for young people to have accessible bottle they can pay easily and to share with their friends. For me, that's good way.
And how much of Bourgogne has this attitude? You know, because I mean, I think externally, certain circles, when they think of it, they think of the very high end Grand Crus. They think of, you know, wines that, frankly, in the United States go for a lot of money. They're very expensive. In fact, they're expensive in a way that you're not sure when should I drink this wine because, you know, it cost me 500 euros or even 200 euros. I mean, for some people, 100 euros is a very expensive bottle of wine. Okay. So what's the overall, I mean, do most winemakers in Bourgogne feel the way you do?
What do you mean about overall?
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, there's a lot of wine made in Bourgogne that people don't necessarily know about. They don't see. So do most winemakers in Bourgogne want their wine to be affordable? You know, something that is within reach for normal people, or people trying to get their wine more expensive?
I think a lot of people are trying to get their wine more expensive, but at the end, if you are buying a bottle in America, you sometimes you just don't know how much it costs from the domain. After, it's also a lot of speculation because the demand in Burgundy is so high. A lot of people are using this fact to make a lot of money. It's my point of view, but it's also, I saw it. Yeah, and that's not very, very good for the winemaker because some winemakers are producing very high quality wines, but they are not selling it a lot of money, but very expensive. But at the end, everybody makes a lot of money with it. So
that's a really, really good point. What, besides the Mâconnais, which is one of the golden regions, I would say. I mean, really, I'm not kidding. Anyone listening, you cannot go wrong with a lot. Most of the wines there are they're not only affordable, they're like actually a really, really good deal. And I'm speaking to the wines that come into the United States often. Now, I've been there and I've drank a lot of wines that are not imported, and some of those are even better. I mean, I can't believe how affordable they are. What other parts of Bourgogne would you recommend people look for these kind of wines to get into things and figure it out and be able to afford the wines? What other places besides the Mâcon?
I would say Puy-Fuissé, for example. Puy-Fuissé is very good quality wines. After, if you go to Mâcon Village, you can find very good wines as well. But you have to know a little bit more about it because there's so many diversity. It could be difficult to find the good one, the one you want. So Puy-Fuissé, it's always very good terroir, a lot of chokes there, but the same, there's so many different domains, very small domains. You have to try a lot of it.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. What do you see as the future of Bourgogne? I mean, I know you can speak mostly from making wine in the Mâconnais, but what do you see as the future? What would you like to see happen in the region, and what would you like to see people think about the region?
I don't really know, because for me, we have a good vision of winemaking. I've seen a lot of people same age than me making really good job, and we all work well. I think we are pretty in a good way of working. I don't really know. The big deal, it will be to don't make, especially for Chardonnay, don't make wine too alcoholic, too heavy. We need more acidity. We need more light taste. Yeah. So, and it will be a big challenge for the next years.
I have to say, I hope, I have two daughters and I hope they turn out like you guys. You guys behave yourselves very well. None of you are out there like, I want to grow Cabernet if it gets hot. So you guys are behaving yourself very well. I'm afraid my kids will be more rebellious than you guys. What about you, Theo? What do you see as the future for the region?
Yes, to me, the future is more about to maintain the quality, to maintain a small, high-quality domain. And that's a big deal, because if you've got too popular, you can, so the price of the land are increasing. So of course the price of the wine is doing the same. And after, the wine is difficult to buy. So to me, the biggest deal in the future, it will be to maintain, this. So small, high quality domain and family domain. That could be very good. Because that's our brand in Burgundy. But I don't know about this in the future, because there is most and most investors buying domains, and it's sometimes not a family domain, but or just in the label. So I want to maintain this in the future.
That's very well said. You definitely, you guys have it together. I really appreciate this very much. I'm going to drink a lot of your wine now. So,
perfect.
Very good. I really appreciate it. I know you guys were just in the vineyard right before this recording, yeah. And
I had a tractor accident this morning. So,
you had a tractor accident this morning?
Yeah.
Are you
kind of big one?
Are you okay? Really? Yeah, what happened?
Everything is fine. It goes on the side.
You rolled your tractor over this morning before we did this podcast.
Yeah.
On my car.
On my brother's car, yeah.
On your brother's car?
Yes.
Yeah. You rolled it on the... Wait, what? Wait, hold on. So, oh my God. I'm looking at a picture right now of a tractor turned sideways on your car. Wait, first of all, we've done this whole podcast and you're not yelling at your brother for ruining your car. No.
He did.
Actually, it's very interesting. It's very interesting working in family. It's very interesting because, you know, when we started with my brother in 2017, it was a big question. If it will be okay with my brother, with my parents. And it works fine. You can see it.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling after we get off this podcast, he's going to come up and smack you in the back of the head, you know, but...
No, he already did.
He already did. Okay, good. Were you just going too fast around the corner or did you drive on the side of a hill? How did you manage to do that?
On the side of a hill, yeah.
Yeah, okay. The slope was too
high. So it was his fault. That it was Theo's fault that he parked his car on the under part of a hill. It's not your fault.
No.
Oh, amazing.
No, it was a big mistake for me.
Well... Don't tell your dad.
I already know.
Well, is the tractor still on the car, or are you able to pull it off?
No, it's okay now.
No, the tractor is fine, but Theo's car is not, actually. But yeah.
This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it from you two. And
yeah, me too.
Thank you. Go get some rest. I know it's the evening there in France. So get some rest, and I will talk to you boys soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I want to thank all of you for listening to today's podcast. Thank you to Theo and Paul of Domain Merlin. If you do not subscribe to SOMTV, go to SOMTV.com and subscribe right now to watch our brand new original film, Inheriting the Future on Borgogna, and hundreds of hours of other great stuff in the food and wine world. Everybody be safe and drink something nice for me.